is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Three things win here. Team toughness and execution. And I think we've studied every conference championship team. They're always usually the best in those three areas. Whatever they're doing, it doesn't even matter style of play. It's just those elements. And so we're really focused on that.
Greg Curley is in his 23rd season as the head men's basketball coach at Juniata College in Huntington, Pennsylvania. Curley has amassed 291 wins at Juniata, the most of any coach in program history. Curley's coaching career began in 1995 when he served as the graduate assistant coach at Allegheny College for the 1995-96 season. 1 year later, he became an assistant at Juniata for three seasons from August of 1996 to July of 1999. He left Juniata in July of 1999 to become the assistant men's basketball coach and head golf coach at Penn State Barron. However, before the start of the 99-2000 basketball season, Curley returned to his alma mater, Allegheny College, as an assistant varsity coach and head junior varsity coach for the men's basketball program. A native of State College, Pennsylvania, Greg was a four-time Allegheny College scholar-athlete and earned four varsity letters on the men's basketball team. He was elected as a team captain and received the Glenn Thompson Award for Leadership as a senior. Hey, Hoopheads, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help your team train bigger and better with exclusive Black Friday savings all month long. Now until November 30th, get $3,500 off the Dr. Dish CT Plus and experience firsthand what the ultimate training solution is all about. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Chris Meadows, player development coach and author of the book, I Am D1, and you are listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Are you a basketball coach or trainer looking to connect with new clients? U-Train is here to help you manage your business and reach a wider audience. Best of all, it's completely free to use. Simply create a profile, list your services, post pins, and share your free booking website link. You can set your own rates and schedule and use U-Train to communicate with clients, manage appointments, handle refunds, and collect payments automatically. So why wait? Join U-Train today for free and start reaching new clients. That's U-Train, U-T-R-A-I-N, U-Train. Download today on the App Store and Google Play.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Grab a notebook and pen as you listen to this episode with Greg Curley, head men's basketball coach at Juniata College in the state of Pennsylvania.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Suckle tonight, but I am pleased to welcome Greg Curley, head men's basketball coach at Juniata College. Greg, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Thrilled to have you on. Looking forward to diving into all the different things that you've been able to do in your career thus far. Let's go ahead and start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me a little bit about some of the first experiences that you had with the game of basketball.
Yeah, so I grew up in State College, Pennsylvania, you know, obviously home of Penn State. And it was myself and I have an older brother, Kevin, who's actually the head coach at McDaniel College. It's just the two of us. But my dad was the oldest of six boys, and they all and he grew up in State College as well. And he was a walk-on at Penn State for a couple years. So as far back as I can remember, we've been kind of attached to basketball. And You know, Saturday afternoons for us at the time, we would go up to Rec Hall and watch practice. The guy, when we got a little older, Bruce Parkhill became the head coach at Penn State, and he was a State College native too, and actually grew up with my dad and my uncles. And so, I mean, going to gyms, going to games, we had season tickets, we'd go watch practices. I remember one time we got to go in the auxiliary gym, and my brother and I got to watch Penn State scrimmage William and Mary when Barry Parkhill was the coach there. So we just kind of always had a front row seat to it. As I said, my dad was the oldest of six boys. They were all – the youngest are only about 10 years older than my brother and I, so we grew up watching them play. My dad still played, so we would tag along with him when he'd go play pickup on the weekends, or he played kind of on a travel team for a while then too, and we're part of that. So it's always been a part of what we've done. We played basketball – or played baseball, soccer, other sports, but always kind of came back to basketball.
How did your dad influence you as a player as you started to get a little bit older and take the game more seriously? How did your dad, what did his influence mean to your career?
Well, I mean, I think that he has two sons that wound up being college basketball coaches, kind of says it all. Now, he did not coach. He graduated from Penn State on a Saturday and started work there on a Monday. He was an accountant and worked in the business office and worked his way up. But he coached us, you know, through Biddy basketball in those days, did some of that. But the biggest thing for us was just, he took us to the gym all the time. It was kind of cool growing up at State College in those days. Before these days, you could get into any gym on campus. And I think there at one count, there were like 36 hoops, indoor hoops that we could access at Penn State's campus anytime we kind of wanted to. And he kind of grew up knowing how to walk to different gyms. My grandparents lived right across the street from Rec Hall. And so we could go there, ride our bike there, and then walk to the different gyms, see what was open and play. So it was, for a basketball person, you can't kind of grow up any better. But my dad's influence, I mean, he was a kind of a no-nonsense guy with it. You know, the game's got to be played the right way. You know, the harder you work, the more you get out of it. Growing up, again, the influence of like Coach Parkhill, Coach Chichella, some other people, those guys were coaches. You know, it was slap the floor, get after it. Like there was no messing around. And so I think that's kind of influenced, both my brother and I are both really defensively focused. But we don't try to make the game too complicated. I think sometimes that happens. It's still kind of the same things that win. And I think that all comes from our dad.
How do you compare and contrast the way that you grew up in the game compared to the way that the guys who play for you today grow up in the game? Just what do you see as being the pluses and minuses of sort of the two different systems that obviously things were a lot different when you and I were kids growing up?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. I was talking to my assistant about this yesterday. We've already started practice. We're actually in Canada right now, so we got to play practice a little bit early. But I think now, I think guys are better now because of personal trainers, kind of the commitment to fitness. Like they're really great in the weight room. They're great at individual workouts. You can't get them to go any harder. I mean, they love that stuff. But I think the connection to just playing the game and just learning how to play, move the ball, play with other guys. I mean, because the pickup world is gone. And just the chance to just go play. And I think when we came up, you had to kind of go do it on your own. And you had to decide to go do it on your own. I think the weight training, getting guys to do skill work, that was always the harder things with the guys I played with and the guys when we first started. But you could get them to play. They could play forever. And now we even have guys sometimes make comments. Well, coach, pickup's not very good basketball. It's not very good. And it's like, oh, come on, man, because they're so used to always right. having a coach or somebody telling them where to go. I think they're obviously more skilled. They're way better with the ball probably. But I think the essence of the game is five guys playing together and really understanding how to play. And I am a bit afraid on where we go or where we're going that could get lost. But I guess that's where coaches come in and hopefully guys like us talking to people about what it's still really about. Honestly, I'm a little bit sad for these guys because they don't really know what that experience was to just walk into a gym and find nine guys you never even met and establish a pecking order in the gym that day. Who's better than who and how do you play together and how do you find a way to win?
Man, that is well said. I mean, I couldn't agree more with everything that you just said there, especially when you said that you feel bad for your guys today. Like I say this all the time, that I feel bad for my own son. Like my son's a senior this year. And I look at the way that he came up, and I think about comparing and contrasting it to the way that I played. And to your point, I mean, I showed up at gyms, I showed up at playgrounds, I showed up wherever with sometimes guys, a lot of guys I know, and sometimes very few guys that you know, and guys of all different ages from all different places and all over the world. And it's just like, I feel like that piece of it, as you said, learning the game and just kind of understanding how you make basketball work with different personalities and different people and different styles of play. And obviously you're not always finding the greatest games and the greatest players, but you can always figure out a way to make it beneficial and help yourself to get better. And kids today, when they grow up and they are always playing in front of mom and dad, there always is a scoreboard, there's always a coach on the sideline. And I just think that something is lost. And I agree with you 100%. Players today are way more skilled. If you think back, I'm sure you can do the same thought exercise that I do, where you think about some of the players that played in high school that were the 11th, 12th, 13th man on high school teams when you and I were in high school. And I mean, those kids were, maybe they set screens, or maybe they're a rebounder, or maybe they're a football kid, but they had really no discernible basketball skill. And now you look at the 12th player on a high school team, and those kids can all handle the ball and they can all shoot, and you put them in a gym by themselves and they all look really good. And then you sometimes, I think, does that translate in the same way? And it's just, again, not necessarily better or worse, but I definitely feel bad that kids today don't get to experience that pickup basketball culture of me being a 14-year-old and kind of going up to the park and sitting down on the bench and some guy who's 26 kind of putting his arm around me and saying, hey, this is kind of what it takes to be successful in the game. Kids don't have those same types of relationships that you and I were fortunate enough to have as part of that playground culture, which, as you said, is completely gone. I mean, even if you're a good high school or college player, I don't even know where you go to even find a pickup game that's worth playing in.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that happens is the kind of the nature just even of individual training or being trained is the focus turns inward and what you do and how you play and how you fit. And that's not what the game's really supposed to teach or what the game's about. And that disappoints me. I mean, I think we get, you can't play the game that way and be really successful. Or a few can play that. Let's put it this way, unless you're exceptional.
Right.
If you're the exception to the rule, then you can kind of go about it what's best for you. But the whole point of the game is figuring out how you can contribute to the success of the group. And I think when the focus is about, well, I can do this, I can do that. And sometimes the kids are so skilled, but they're not athletic enough to apply it to a team concept.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there would be a better way to go about it. And that's, I think, created some challenges for coaches. Because it's really hard to convince anybody, I can do this and do that. But even in our day, it was hard to understand you weren't as athletic as somebody. If you're a competitor, you're not believing that, right? But I think as everybody kind of becomes more skilled, that separation, it's harder to come by, number one, and then it's probably less, it's less likely somebody realizes where their limitations are. When you're playing against the cone, everybody can make a move,
And, exactly.
And it doesn't fight back. And then when you get athletic guys, the game changes and it's about athleticism. It's about guys that can do that, but there's a place for those other guys, but the art of setting a screen or playing defense or passing a ball or moving and finding an open guy or having great vision. Those are things that still to this day, those are what define our best players. I think it's a little bit in danger, but I also give those guys credit. One of our guys that played for us is a high level trainer and does a lot of stuff, and their creativity is great. But I think the creativity that's put in the game is really from the trainers that come up with different moves as opposed from guys watching the game, playing the game. And I think the art of pickup, you play in a bad pickup game and you're the best player, that's a different experience than when you play in a great pickup game and you're a worst player.
Absolutely.
And those things, I think those extremes really help you develop and get a sense of yourself and grow real confidence, because when you play the really good guys that you probably can't keep up with, there's ways you can be effective. And then when you play others, it's good to feel like you're dominant sometimes and you're really good. And when you're always with a coach, you're always in the role the coach wants. You're always doing what the coach wants. And I think it stifles some of the development at times too. So we try to, as much as we can, we try to enforce playing in the off season and get them to play. And we still make our guys, play to seven and win or stay. And, You know, like yep. you got to pick teams, and they resist it. They hate it. They, well, you know, we want to get, hey, man, you know, this isn't about everybody playing right now. This is teaching some other things and some right. different kind of approaches to the game.
How do you approach trying to, I don't want to say fix is the wrong word, but how do you approach trying to combat that in a practice setting? I mean, obviously in the off season, you kind of put kids in that environment. That's, you know, not the same as going to the playground, but there are playing pickup basketball and there's things that they obviously have to do that you're not dictating to them. But how do you think about it in terms of in your formal practices, trying to instill that creativity and instill some of that competitiveness and those things that you and I learned on the playground?
Well, I mean, I think you start there. I mean, I think you try to keep as many drills as competitive as you can. You know, we tell the guys all the time, you know, you got to establish your own pecking order. And with every team every year, it gets reestablished. You know, you don't just come back and slot yourself in. There's new guys coming in and guys that developed and got better. So I think creating competitive opportunities in practice are super important. You know, we're still a motion team. There's not many of us left. And I mean, a screen and cut, motion line, screen line, like we're a pure motion team, play without the ball. So I think naturally with us, we're playing a ton of 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 2-on-1, 3-on-2, those kind of situations, down a man advantage situations. And I think that helps, right? And I think defensively, that's really where we hang our head too. Same thing, putting yourself in disadvantaged situations, trying to make it play through competitively. You got to get a certain number of stops, seeing different things. But it's a challenge. And then I think the other thing is just constant conversations with guys about the game and trying to identify what our culture and what we're going to be about. And here's how we see it. And here's why. And this is why the game is beneficial over time. You know, no one remembers in 25 years how many points you scored, but they're going to know what kind of teammate you are or how you work with others and trying to encourage, you know, and trying to, you know, emphasize that stuff.
How do you keep the competitiveness at a high level and still keep your guys tightly connected and being great teammates? Because we've all been in situations where, yeah, it's super competitive, but then guys are kind of at each other's throats and builds up that animosity. And then we've been in other environments where, man, these dudes are going at it. And then 2 minutes after practice, they got their arm around each other and can go and just sit down and eat and still be buddies. So how do you think about that piece of it, keeping the team concept together and also keeping the competitiveness high?
Well, I mean, I think number one, you have to lead with that. You know, that's got to be your consistent. Well, you know, you are what you emphasize. So if you're always talking about team, and that's what your values are based, I think guys pick up on that. I think for us, you know, we recruit. So talking to guys that you need to be a team guy to be here, if you're not that, this isn't the best place. So I think that helps us a little bit. You know, I think the other thing is like the compete, don't compare. You know, it's not, you know, we're not trying, we're trying to be, you know, whoever we play next Saturday, you know, the purpose of competition for us is to make each other better. So you need to appreciate that in each other and kind of emphasizing that and, you know, working through that stuff. And it can be a bit of a challenge. I mean, I think the more mature kids you have, the better or easier all of this stuff is. The less mature, you're going to have to work through some stuff. But I just think just being consistent about it, I think, you know, how you build your groups when you know, when you compete, who's where, who are you playing against, how are you doing it? You know, I think when you do it, I think there's got to be a teaching blend and you know, kind of concept-based stuff. And then there's like, hey, man, this is all out, like, mano a mano, who's got it, and the guts and the grit and stuff, and mixing those things together.
Well, let's work backwards. You and your brother obviously end up as college basketball coaches. When did you know you wanted to coach? Was that something that you knew early on in your playing career, or was it something that you didn't get to until after you were done playing?
I mean, it was always in the back of my mind. I think my brother, it was more on the top of his mind. I remember in those days, Brian Hill, who wound up being the head coach of Orlando Magic, was an assistant at Penn State, and his son, Chris, was my age. So we lived in the same block, so we were really good friends. But my brother, I remember him going to the house to talk to them about how he can become a college basketball coach. I mean, he really wanted. He's 2 years older than me. And I always had it in my mind. But growing up, I thought about, like, I was a history major in college, and I thought about law school, kind of FBI, CIA kind of stuff. And I sort of thought about it, but I think I always knew coaching was going to be a path. And not too long after I got into college, I knew that that was the direction I was going to go. It might have been one of those I got towards the end and I didn't want to go get a real job, you know. I think a lot of it is just leaving the locker room, leaving kind of that competitive space is, you know, I've never not had a season. And, you know, that's something I'd say with a lot of pride. And, you know, it still to this day, man, there's nothing like it. Kind of like, we had a great practice today and, you know, we just drove 9 hours to get to Ottawa, Canada. And I told my assistant, said I'd do that just for a good practice. You know, like we're kind of crazy. Not kind of. I always say you got to be a little bit crazy to be good. But I think that's kind of where we are. So, yeah, nothing changes with it.
Well, talk about the decision to go to Allegheny when you graduate from high school. What's the process like? Are there any lessons that you took from your experience that you utilize as a head coach when you're recruiting guys, whether it's things that you say, questions you ask? Just talk a little bit about your own process of choosing Allegheny.
Yeah, I mean, I learned a ton. I mean, I think all those experiences shape us. But I mean, I went there because they gave me they responded to me. You know, I was in a unique situation. My high school senior year, we had a very good team. We had 12 seniors on my high school team. So we went all the way through with 12 seniors. I'm probably one of the rare guys. I never started a high school game. I was basically a sixth man the entire time. We lost to the state runner up at the time that had Danny Fords and some other guys. We beat them in the districts and then we lost in the first round of states. So we had a good team, very good team with a lot of players, but I was the only one that actually really wanted to keep going and playing. We had some guys that did some other things. And it was one of those where I recruited other places. And Allegheny gave me a response and said I had a chance. First and foremost, they fit what I wanted academically. I wanted a really good school. I wanted that kind of experience. Growing up kind of in the footprint of Penn State, pretty much everybody that goes there goes to Penn State. It's kind of, if you grow up there, you don't think there's anything beyond that. And I think part of the basketball experiences I had, I knew there was. And so when I went to Allegheny, Phil Ness was the head coach there at the time. He was an all-time great at Lafayette and it's Hall of Famer now at Allegheny as a head coach. And they just gave me a chance. In those days, that was 17 guys they brought in my freshman year recruiting class. They brought in 17 recruits. They had a JV team. and I was just happy to be playing. You know, I was there at 6 a.m. and I remember, you know, doing medicine ball three-man weave with like eight guys. And I thought it was the greatest thing ever. And, you know, I was one of those kind of a journeyman experiences. Out of those 17 guys, I was probably 15 on the list. I was a late bloomer. My senior year in high school, I didn't turn 16 till December. So when I was a freshman in college, I had to have my parents sign the NCAA paperwork because I wasn't 18. So I grew 4 inches, put on about 50 pounds in college. A lot of work, a lot of eating, a lot of working out, and kind of developed. And I think the guard skills I had from high school really helped me with that. I was a point guard, undersized one, and playing at a high level high school. So that helped me in college. And I remember my sophomore year at Allegheny, I played both. You can't do that these days. I played JV and varsity. Nice. I practiced at 6 a.m. with the JV, and then I practiced varsity in the afternoon every day.
Load management, huh?
Yeah, those days. I mean, how about it, right?
things are a little bit different. No one was really concerned about your recovery time or your rest or any of that. That did not exist back in our day.
No, and you know, our trainer, Jamie Plunkett was he's a Canadian who played hockey at Cornell. He was an athletic trainer. They won multiple state championships in hockey was there. So he was the old, hey, tape an Advil on it. Tell me when you got a real problem. You know, he's the best. And the old ice buckets, you remember that? Like if you had an ankle, you got a choice, keep going or put it in an ice bucket. But yeah, it was different. I don't know, always good, but, you know, I wouldn't have changed it. And I think that shapes where you are. You know, and working through, you know, my sophomore year, we had a really good team. We won the NCAC, which is a heck of a league. Great. I mean, I don't know how many top 10 teams that year. And then my going into my junior year, we just had crazy stuff happen. And I actually wound up playing. You know, I wound up being sixth man on the varsity. And my senior year wound up being a starter. and captain from being where I was. But, you know, we didn't really have much success my junior and senior year because of some injuries and some losses of guys. It's probably what my opportunity was to play. So all of that has shaped me. I've been in every situation. I've been a guy that wasn't going to play, a guy that might play. I've been a guy that was relied on. And I think those experiences have been very, very important for me to understand kind of psychologically where guys are and appreciate the opportunities.
Were you at any point during your playing career, were you thinking the game at all as a coach, or were you still just strictly looking at it from a player's perspective? Because I know that when I was playing, I never really thought at all about the game from a coaching standpoint. I was just focused on what do I have to do as a player. And it wasn't until after I got done playing that I looked around kind of like you. I'm like, what? You want me to get a real job? I better figure out. I better figure out how I can work some basketball back into this thing. So,
yeah, no, I think I actually did. I just wasn't a good enough player not to. I mean, my thing was I was a defender. I was kind of a jack of all trades. I mean, the thing I always say is I played all five positions in college. I played 5 minutes of center. So I say I played every position, which rare few guys do. So that was kind of my niche. And I figured that out early. You know, I could dribble pass from being a point guard in high school, and I grew. I was willing to guard guys. I wasn't afraid of, like, the diving on loose balls, winning sprints. You know, it's kind of what you always think about with those guys. That was me. Embraced it. One of those guys probably worked like crazy, shot as many shots as any guy that could make them all, but probably wasn't going to in the game, even though I thought I would, you know, because I put the work in. And I think I did. And, you know, my senior year, really cool. My brother, 2 years older, he had started coaching, and he was a GA at Bethany, and we went down there and played them actually on my 21st birthday. So he was in college coaching. We beat them by six. It was kind of a cool day. Nice. And he had just started. So, like, him being a coach and that kind of, like, planted the seed that I was going to do it too. It's kind of something we've done all the way through, which has been really neat. You know, this job at times can be pretty lonely, right? Like, it's hard. You got to – not many people quite get it. Everybody thinks they do, right? But very few really understand. And so it's kind of cool to have somebody to go through with. And it's kind of always been that with us. When you're younger, it's about chasing the next big job, or you might wind up here or there. You get a little older, it's just about how you're going to manage a team and have good practice and get through the next day, you know.
How much do you talk to your brother?
You know, not as much as you might think. They're actually in Canada too. They're in Toronto. But, like, he called me yesterday, and I was busy packing, so I never called him back. So I'll catch him when I catch him. It's probably one of those, like, when we need each other, we know something's going on, we catch up. We both follow each other all the time. Neither one of us are great to talk to when it's not going well. when it's going well, we don't need to talk to each other. So, right. But we're still very close. I mean, our families are close. So we see each other all the time. But we're not, like, call every day about a practice or a game. Gotcha. It's really more kind of like, you need me, we're here. And if we do talk, it's more about what's going on with his kids and what's going on with my kids, and what the plans are for how are we going to figure out a Christmas or a Thanksgiving when we can never, ever match up schedules. So.
Right, exactly. Yeah, trying to coordinate that. I can only imagine. All right, so you graduate and you get an opportunity to come back to the program as a GA. Tell me a little bit about that process, what that looked like going from I graduate, I'm in the program as a player, now I'm going to transition over to the coaching ranks. How'd that happen? Then what was that transition like for you?
I mean, it was actually like a really simple thing. I remember going in, you know, you have your end of the year meetings, you know, and after senior year, I go in and I was talking to Coach Ness, and he's like, "Girls, you know, what do you think about doing?" And I was like, "Well, I want to try to coach. I mean, look for a GA and stuff." And he's just like, "Well, if you want to stay, you can stay here." He's like, "I don't have anything to pay you. I'll see if I can get you a meal plan or something. But if you want to work, you know," and I think that's a little different these days than it was then. You know, you probably did. You just kind of said, "Okay." All right. I said, "All right." So, I think my first job was literally I got two meals a day. That was it. I wound up going to Edinburgh for graduate school and paid for my year with more graduate loans so I could coach. And I did that for years. Probably the best thing I ever did. He got me a job in the summer working like Parks and Rec, doing that kind of stuff. I worked at a hardware store, and I'm the worst guy. I'd go in there Sundays to the hardware store these guys built their own houses and stuff. I'd have to fake it, tell them, oh, yeah.
You need these nails, right? You need this saw, huh?
I did say, oh, I was probably good. You learned something. I didn't learn anything other than how to duck and cover. But, you know, I did that. And, you know, you didn't know any better. You're just chasing it. You know, I remember that first year it took me the Final Four in New York City. It was when it was in New York City. My brother's there, you know, like you see all the guys. You go to the rock party or whatever it was back there and you do that stuff. And, man, didn't get any better than that, you know, just thinking about coaching hoops and doing that stuff. So it was a lot of fun. I mean, the transition to being a GA with the guys I just finished playing with was challenging. But I think through Coach Ness and my brother, you know, I just knew, you know, you gotta be the coach, not their buddy. And I was still their buddy, but like I did a pretty good job of drawing the lines, and those guys were great guys and I think respected what I needed to do. So it helped me. And, you know, you're spending enough time recruiting and doing other stuff. I mean, it worked out, and we had two really good seasons. So I was really happy to be a part of it. The guys that finished behind me, you know, I felt like I had a little influence on kind of with my leadership to help them get there. So it was nice to kind of see that, follow all the way through.
What did you know right away that you're like, man, I love this part of being a coach? Was there one or two things that stood out that you were like, man, this is what's really going to push me over the top and I know I'm in the right place?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I still actually kind of enjoy most parts of it. There's not a lot I don't like. But I'm probably starting out, like, I liked scouting. You know, I liked watching film and learning the game and just diving into it. I remember, you know, in those days, Princeton offense, they were secretive. They wouldn't tell you what it was. And I remember breaking it down. I got to still have the binders where I broke the whole entire thing down and had it broken down. And it was pretty close. You know, now it's kind of wide open and a lot more simplistic than I could get it. But I just liked that kind of stuff. I liked that opportunity. And then, you know, the coaching, just being in the gym, working with guys. I think as a young assistant, I liked the individual work stuff just because it was a chance to kind of put your footprint on it. And coach was great. And I was able to coach JV, the JV team too. So I was doing my own practice plans right away. I saved those. I even used some of them when I first started coaching. So, back in those days, even now, especially at the Division III level, you know, there's one or two of us and you got to do everything, a little bit of everything. And I think that really prepares you. And I've been fortunate, you know, the only things I really didn't like sometimes, you know, like sometimes doing some of the travel stuff and those kind of things is a bit of a drag, but it's, you know, nothing you can't really handle, you know, to get to the other stuff. And there's still nothing like competing. There's nothing like being in a locker room, like in an intense game. And that kind of atmosphere, man, it doesn't get better than that.
So after that season, you get an opportunity to maybe get a paycheck here, huh? Right. So, which is always a positive. So you're looking at any opportunity, I'm sure, that comes with a paycheck. So what did that look like for you as that season was wrapping up? You're obviously at your alma mater, which is great, but what did it look like getting that next opportunity?
Yeah. So, I would work camps in summer, try to make enough to get through the year, but, I was home. I was just home for a weekend or something. And, in those days you looked in the paper and I saw that they hired, or maybe in the old NCAA market or whatever, I saw Juniata hired a new head coach. And previously the coach had actually been a part-time like high school teacher, and they went to a full-time coach. They sort of committed to it. And so I just called. And said, hey, I saw you just got hired. Rick Ferry, who's now the head coach at Albright, who's had a great career. I just called him and said, hey, have you hired an assistant? And he's like, no, I don't have an assistant yet. And it was one of those. I got in a car, drove down like that day. And within 2 days, I had the job. And it was a big, big pay raise. I think I made $3,000, but I was an RD of a dorm. So I got full meals and I got room and board. So honestly, it was – hey, man, nothing like it. It was a good deal. And so I got to – that was a cool opportunity because we inherited a team that was not good at all. And the first year that we were there, we were 3-21 and really struggled. But the three games we won, I can remember a lot of them, and those kids really worked hard. But we were just so far behind our league. It was a good league, and – we had had part-time coaches for 20 years when everybody else had full-time coaches. So there was just a lot of work to do, but that was the same thing. You know, it was Rick's first head job. You know, my first kind of assistant away from Allegheny. So again, I had a chance to do everything, literally everything. I was involved with like, what are we going to run? How are we going to do this? You know, we had to go recruit everywhere all the time. I remember those days when Rick did it, like I had to wear a shirt and tie or a shirt tie and a jacket to go recruit at high school games. And that doesn't happen very often. So I'm a 22-year-old guy rolling in there and all my other coaching buddies are laughing at me. But that's what you did back then. And you try to get players. And, so it was, it really, really helped a lot. And a lot of the connections with guys I met then that played at Juniad, I still have. My assistant now, Nick Hager, his older brother was who one of our first recruits out of that group because he was from near Allegheny. His mom's an assistant AD there. So it's kind of a full circle deal, but it was a really, really, really good experience to be a part of kind of building a program again. And I had a chance to see probably what I'd do and what I wouldn't do if I had an opportunity to walk into that job. And eventually, you know, sure enough, you know, down the road, it became an opportunity. It really helped, I think, us kind of jumpstart what we're doing here.
What do you think was the key to getting that thing started? And then you mentioned something that maybe you wouldn't do. So what's one or two things that you knew you were going to do as a result of that experience? And maybe one thing that if you had it to do over again, when you look back, maybe wasn't the best thing to do, or maybe it was something that didn't work as well as you hoped.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I came in, the first thing we did is we just wanted to identify and, you know, establish an identity. And our whole thing was, you know, we hardest working team in basketball is our catchphrase. And it was the old, you know, a little bit of James Brown, but a lot of it was just, you know, we're going to deserve the win, whether we can or can't. I don't know. We have enough kind of, you know, we didn't have kind of the horses in the barn to probably win a ton, but we just wanted to establish kind of an identity. And I thought that was probably the best thing we did from day one. Like, this is who we're going to be. Like, we're going to work the hardest. Whether we literally could do that or not, we were going to feel like no one outworked us and we deserve the win. I think that was a really good thing. I think with that a little bit, you know, you push, you drive, you're young, you're going after it. I think that was a mistake. I think the one area that the real growth took place for us was really kind of settling down into who and what we were going to be from an X and O standpoint and kind of sticking with what we're going to be and understanding like evolving. It doesn't mean wholesale change with that or trying everything everybody under the sun did. It's just adjusting and just constantly adjusting, but still having a base set of values and core that it wasn't that I didn't know we needed that early. It's just that you're young and you don't know what those things are, right? Like I got binders full of stuff that I wanted to do. And you go through all those things and you realize, nope, yep. And I think that's just time and that's just working through it.
All right. So you're there at Juniata for 3 years as an assistant, and then you get an opportunity to go to Penn State Barron. How did you find out about that opportunity? What was the interview process like? What do you remember about that transition?
Yeah, that was interesting. So I knew Coach Nyland, from my time at Allegheny. He had just, I believe it's 30 years later now, but he had just come in to Barron at that time, played against them. My brother knew him, obviously, because he was in kind of the Division III circuit in that world too. And when I was my second or third year at Juniata, I kept looking for jobs like most assistants do. And I actually called Coach Nyland about an assistant job in Des Moines because my brother was an assistant at Colgate. And Dave Paulson was up there then, and I was trying to look at the Lemoyne job. But it was another job that paid $2,000, and I was just like, I don't know. I can't keep doing it. Like, eventually, right. You got to get a job,
exactly.
Right?
Yep,
so
right.
So I interviewed for the job at Lemoyne and was fortunate enough to be offered it. But I just literally ran out. I was like, I don't know that I can keep doing this. And I think all of us that have been in this, you know, a lot of times, my brother and I always tell guys, young guys, our best advice is just do this long enough to where you don't have another choice to do anything else. Like, you get 5 or 6 years in, you have no other skills. You got to make it. Like, that's part of the deal. But so in the course of that happening, Coach Nyland's assistant left right when that happened. And his job was a better situation. It was more financially secure. It still wasn't great, but it was a piece together, you know, an $11,000, $12,000. And the big thing is either one of those guys, I mean, playing, you know, working for Coach Paulson or working for Coach Nyland, I just – knew what I was going to learn and how great those guys were going to be. I know Barron one was a better situation, more secure for me. And I was like, I can make it another couple years if I take this one. That was really the crux of the choice. That was it. And so I went there, and as luck would have it, within 3 months, the assistant job at Allegheny opened again, and that was a full-time job. And it was full-time with benefits. It was, you know, it was a real job. And God bless Coach Nyland. I, you know, it was a tough, it was a really tough choice for me. You know, do I stay? Do I do it? And Coach Ness was great about it too. And a lot of the mentors I talked to, and I think collectively everyone understood, like, hey, you know, like, you know, the opportunity you have there is great. You don't want to let anybody down, but you know, that's not going to buy a loaf of bread. You know, if you're going to do this, you got to do it. And so after 3 months, I never even got to practice with Coach Nyland, which was tough. And we still have a great relationship, and I appreciate that from him. That tells you what kind of man he is and what kind of coach. I wound up going back to Allegheny for coach. Part of it was my alma mater. Part of it was my coach. A lot of it was just I had to make a life. And it was a good decision for me. It was a great decision in terms of it's kept me in it this long, you know. And if not, I don't know if it would have. And so went back to Allegheny for a few more years with Coach Ness. And, you know, I had other experiences, was able to bring that to our program there. And then after a couple of years, Rick wound up leaving Juniata, and I was fortunate enough at 26 to wind up getting the head coaching job at Juniata.
What kind of questions do you remember them asking you? Obviously, it's going to be your first head coaching job, so they're going to vet you pretty strongly. What do you remember about what they asked you?
Yeah, I mean, the standard ones, you know, like program philosophy. What's your program philosophy? What's your, you know, it might have been like a scenario like this happens. What's your philosophy on discipline? Right. How would you approach it? You know, what's not too much, you know, the strengths and weaknesses, not so much, but roundabout ways. You know, what would we see if we watched Juniata play under your leadership? What makes a good coach? Those kind of things. I was really fortunate at Juniata at the time. Larry Bach, who is the all-time winningest volleyball coach at any level, Division I, II, or III, was the volleyball coach there. And he just really got it. He understood how to win. You know, he still has the best NCAA record in history. They did not lose a conference match in 30 years of any kind. And so, like, his consistency and how to do it, and he really, really got it. He was a Penn State guy, played baseball there. So, like, there's a lot of connections there. So, I going back to it, the hardest part was actually the players, because I'd recruited the guys that were still there, but then there were two assistants in between, and they were trying to get the job too, right? So it was a unique situation, and going in and interviewing those guys, you know, as the assistant that I was, and now trying to be a head coach, was unique, because I was still young. I was 26, going on 27. You think you know it, and so that was interesting. I don't remember the questions as much as just kind of, you knew there's personality fits and they probably had an idea. And I was open with them, you know, what you saw me as an assistant, this may not be the way we go, you know, like I'm going to be a head coach.
Right, right.
And, you know, now the buck stops here, the line changes, and it should. And there's a difference, and I don't want that to damage our relationship. And I want it to strengthen our relationship, but it's going to be different. And fortunately, I think that transition was pretty good, but all transitions, those are always tough. When somebody's recruited you to go play for them and you get somebody new in, no matter how close they are to the situation, it's going to be different. And, you know, these are relationships. I tell people in recruiting all the time, like, these are relationships that build over 3-4 years. They're like anything else. Like, not everything is compatible. Not everything's perfect. Not everything, you know, we just see things differently, and that's okay. But when you have those changes, there can be some bumps in the road.
What had you seen during your 3 years as an assistant that made you feel like you could build this program into what you envisioned as being a great Division III program? What were some of the characteristics that you saw that you thought, hey, this can be what I want it to be?
Well, I thought Larry Bach, number one, I could work for a great boss. And a guy that I really wanted to be good and understood what being good was, and was going to support us to do that. They made a commitment. You know, they realized they had made a commitment. And when he became AD, that's when they went to a full-time coach. They added the assistant. So I knew there was, a desire there to be good. And I think that's very, very important. And I knew we were going to get backed, and I was going to be able to coach and have the latitude to make some mistakes, but get better, and also have a good mentor there. I think the other thing is I grew up in that area. You know, Juniata is only about 45 minutes from State College. It wasn't a place that I ever would have considered out of high school. I think part of being at Penn State, it just takes over your world and you don't see it that way. But I thought, you know, there was this idea there weren't any players kind of in central Pennsylvania. There weren't any players you could do anything with. And right or wrong, you know, at that age, I saw myself in that a little bit. And I was like, I didn't agree with that. I thought we had to go about it different. You know, we couldn't play the same game that the other teams in the league were playing. You know, Leadville was coming off national championship. E-Town went to national finals. So, like, we couldn't be them. And we might not be able to go into the same living rooms and get the same kids. But we could find some kids that others maybe never came out to see play. It was a smaller world then. You know, there wasn't a lot of the AAU. You could go kind of get to a gym that no one else would ever show up at and find a kid. That was tough. And so I just thought, hey, that's our end. We can do that. We can, you know, part of kind of the space in our area, it's a long way from Philly to Pittsburgh and no one wants to come in here. So if we can really control this area, we called it the state of Juniata, you know, like if we could just get within 2.5 hours radius, particularly right in central PA, north and south of us, we can go find whatever kids there are, a little smaller, you know, maybe not quite as quick, but tough, like tough kids in this area. We could just build a brand based on that, which also led itself in the hardest working team and kind of our approach to defense and those kind of things. And just try to find an identity that we played to, that we'd have a chance to improve. I've also thought sometimes you take over a program that hasn't been very good. There's no expectation and it's a little easier transition. Everybody, you can't be afraid to take on the challenge of a great program and blah, blah, blah. But there's a lot of pressure that goes with that too, particularly for a brand new young coach. And there's not the latitude to make mistakes and kind of grow into being a coach.
What do you think when you look back on those early years, what's something that when you look back, you maybe weren't that good at that you feel like you've gotten a lot better at as a head coach?
I think basically everything. It's funny. I don't know how you feel. You know, we've had a couple of really good teams. You know, my first team went to conference finals. We lose at the buzzer and just really good players. And whenever those guys are back around, I'm like, you know, you guys made it that far despite of me. You know, I wish I knew what I was doing now. Like
right.
If I knew what I knew now and could go back, I literally look at how much better we could be, you know, and just small things, just like not sweating the small stuff, staying more consistent, you know, more confidence in your beliefs and your values, you know, game experience, you know, just knowing like, don't overreact to stuff. You know, experience and seeing different styles of play. And I think that feeds into how you have to prepare. You know, you don't really know and how consistent. So it's kind of an odd answer, but it's the truth. It's probably everything, you know, just a little bit better. We're not markedly different. And you know how it is. Every player comes back and says, coach, you're a lot easier than you used to be. You're a lot softer than you used to be.
Yeah, exactly.
It's called wisdom. You know, it's not. None of that. Believe me, it still burns. It's in there. You still cross certain lines. We're going to have problems. But part of it then is also you're fighting for your life. And, you're fighting with everything you got. And I think you get a little older. Priorities change a little bit. Not that it's not there, man. It's just that blend. And you don't want to be on that edge so much all the time. I don't think you're as good. I think when you're a little off the edge but close, you're probably at your best. And I think that helps with age, experience, probably a little bit of security. Having success builds confidence just like as a player. And when you don't have it, you're just kind of grasping at straws and hoping.
When did you feel like you had the program in a spot where it was living up to the vision you had before you took the job? And obviously there's ups and downs during the year and you're never satisfied with where you are and you're always trying to get better. But was there a point where you felt like, okay, now we've got it. Now it's more about sustaining what we're doing and trying to grow incrementally as opposed to like, man, we got to have this, you know, we got to have this big turnaround.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure where I still want us to be. And I know that's a tough answer. I mean, we're unique. I said, I got Marv Levy beat, you know, we've lost in 6 conference finals. We've never been in the NCAA tournament in the history of the school. So we still have work to do. You know, we've lost 2 times at the buzzer in the worst possible way, both times with the lead. Everything that's happened has happened. We keep getting up and keep marching through. So it's almost a good thing. We still have a lot of work to be done and steps to take and places to go. But I think, you know, getting to the first conference finals and then being able to do it back-to-back years. And we've had a few of those where you're seeing pockets of more sustained success and where we can consistently get to the playoffs. Like, you know, hopefully we can get to our conference playoffs this year and only the top half of our league gets in the playoffs. And, you know, that'd be the first time in school history that we'd do it four straight years. So we've looked at those as benchmarks. I've always been more of a consistency guy. I think when we recruit, I talk to my assistants like, man, we need to set the floor. We need to make sure the floor. Like, I know everybody wants to shoot for the moon, but man, my experience has taught us we got to have a certain level and maintain that. And then our best years, we're going to be even better. And so I think that's what's kind of come with it and kind of the comfort and security with that. And then knowing like you can't be everything. I don't know about you. I get coach envy all the time. And my assistants, I drive them crazy. Because like I might go watch a team do warm-up drills. Like COVID was awful because we'd go to gyms and we would be sitting there for an hour beforehand, no fans, and you'd watch all the pregame warm-ups. And I never did that. And I'd be like, why aren't we doing those drills? You know, like,
yeah, we need to do that. Those drills are awesome. Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I'd drive them nuts. I'd sit there, talk about it for 2 hours, sleep on it, come back in the next day and say, we can't. I know, coach. You know, and so I'm still in that place, like constantly curious, always thinking there's a better way, like honestly impressed with kind of the creativity of a lot of the younger coaches and kind of what I'd call their daring, you know, they're not afraid and they're going to go after things. And, you know, I think that keeps us on our toes. So we're always moving forward, never satisfied. I'm as nervous today to start our season. You know, we got our first exhibition game tomorrow and I have no idea what kind of team we're going to have, you know, and everybody, oh, coach, you got to know. You've seen – I have no idea. Like, you just – there's too many pieces that go into it, and it's really more about a million small choices that all the guys need to make every day. And you can't ever take those for granted. You got to keep working at them. And I think that's kind of the art of staying consistent in coaching and sticking around is not sliding into, oh, this will just work out. I do think there's some places that can happen. I think you can just amass enough talent to be all right. But this is not one of those. We're always as close to the top as we are the bottom in our league. And it's one of the things we recruit to, we talk about as a team, that never forget that. You know, we're just as close to the bottom all the time. And so don't think the bottom's so bad. Don't think you're so much better than that. But we're just as close to the top. So don't be intimidated by that. Just be the best we can be. Stay focused on it. Keep working.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Where do you go to learn? What are you looking at? Where do you go to other Division III schools that you're watching when you're watching film? Are you going to watching other levels of college basketball? Do you watch any NBA stuff to pick things up? Just where do you go to learn to try to pick up new things that you can kind of add to what you guys do?
Well, a little bit of everything, right? I mean, just always having your phone, you know, or used to be a notepad next to the bed taking notes, but now it's probably more phone. I mean, the world has changed with that. You remember how it is. I mean, there's so much more access to information now. It's crazy. It's almost too much sometimes. I mean, there's only so many ways to do it. You can't do it all the ways. You know, you got to pick and decide. And I think that's a major mistake of, you know, and I had that. And so a mix of all of those. I've also, you know, I think a lot of coaching is more about, you know, relationship and team building. You know, like I think you get into it long enough, you probably have your philosophy on how to play. You probably know how you want to do that. Now it's about getting better in all the other spaces. You know, I spent 11 years as the AD here as well. That's probably the biggest learning experience I ever had. I mean, just exposure to so many people, so many different coaches, administrators, people in other leadership roles, for good and bad. So I just look at basically everything as a growth opportunity. I think hiring assistants that'll challenge you. I think as you get more experience as a coach, you've been around longer, you got to make sure you're hiring people that have, similarities and it will share a common value, but have had different experiences to help shape and inform. And you got to hire guys you can trust to evaluate and say, hey, coach, this is wrong or this is the right way. And I'm still the guy that sometimes needs them to say, no, coach, the way we do it is the right way. I told you, I struggle with that a lot. You know, we could have one bad day. We've done what we've done forever and I want to scrap it. You know, I always say that that's probably healthy. That's you got to have that to keep you on your toes, keep going and never kind of get complacent.
I think that self-reflection is really important. I think the best coaches, and I think people in a lot of different professions and even just your personal life, right? I mean, you can talk to people that you're like, doesn't this dude perceive like what is going on? Like what we see. I mean, we all know people that are like that it's seeming like, do they ever think about what they're doing or how they're doing it or how they come off? And I think the best coaches are constantly reevaluating and self-evaluating and thinking about, is there a way to do this better? And like you said, it's not necessarily that, okay, from game to game, I'm totally switching up what we're trying to do, or even season to season, what we're doing in terms of X's and O's and the basketball philosophy. But it's more just, I think, in those margins, right, where you're looking and say, okay, could we do this better? Could we gain a little bit of an advantage here? How could we tweak the design of practice and this drill to make it just a little bit more effective? And I think the best coaches that I've been around, that's what they do. I mean, they just are always thinking about, how can I get better at what we're doing to make my team better and make my players better and build those relationships and the culture and all that stuff? It just feels like you have to self-reflect in order to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I think this whole thing is kind of the art of taking a complex and making it real simple. I mean, I think, I listen to every podcast. You know, I used to read every book. I unfortunately don't read as much and should because of just the way things are delivered now. So now I've listened to podcasts, listen to every other podcast. And I really have always just tried to listen to coaches of all sports and listen to how they, because I think the art of it is, it's never what we know. It's what we can communicate to them. And, I probably reflect more on like a conversation I had with a guy or how I interacted at practice and how could I do that better. And I think sometimes in the world they think, well, how could you do it gentler or nicer? I don't mean that. I mean more effectively, right? Like we got, you got to be, and how can we be more effective in what we do? But that's the cool part about our job. It never changes. Like this is a brand new season. It'd be 23 years here, and it might as well be year one. Because for our guys, my freshmen, this is their eighth practice. They don't know any different. You know, they have no idea. They're still just as clueless as the freshmen we had 23 years ago. You know, it's a blessing. And to see our veteran guys now that have been through it a little bit and how they carry themselves and where they go. I mean, that's kind of the whole deal, the whole thing. Just constantly. And I think what happens now, because I've been in it, I'm always on my coaches. Like we can't settle. We can't get stale just because we do it the way we do it. And I think a lot of people that play us think we've done it the way we always do it. And, you know, I got guys calling me up, hey, Curl, is you doing this year, doing this? And they start laughing. I'm like, probably not. But believe it or not, it was probably on my board that summer. And we probably legitimately thought about it, right? Like we legitimately thought about it until we thought we had more of a compelling reason to stick with what we are. I always say it's kind of like, like if you got a really good classic car or a race car, you know, after the race season, they take the race car completely apart. And then they put it back together. It might wind up being the same car. It might be almost exactly the same car, but they've gone through the work, right, of taking it apart and deciding if that's how they want to put it together. They might change two or three parts to make it a bit faster. They might overhaul the entire thing. We have never stopped with that process, and I don't think we will. That's probably what I really enjoy now more than anything. But I think that's really important for everybody to do. And then being careful of every new idea, being the best. It's kind of like the individual work you said. I mean, we have a lot of kids that are sort of skilled, semi-skilled, but, you know, when we put 14 guys, guys together, there's a first best shooter and a 14th best shooter. It doesn't matter.
Right. Yep, exactly. They're still right. There's still a pecking order.
Yeah, and that and I think that so you got to be a little careful of that. And but like I get one of the year, we got new young coaches that are really good in our league, and I just hope we can keep up. And I think that goes just where we are and who we are, that humility piece. And man, we better, you know, the line in Gazelle, man, we better get up running, or we're not eating, or we're going to get eaten. So that's the way it is. So.
All right, talk to me a little bit about recruiting, and what are some of the things that you look for beyond the player's basketball skill? What are the kinds of guys that you're looking for that you know are going to fit in well with your program?
Well, I mean, I think the guys that want what we have to offer, Juniata, you know, I would say like we're top 75 liberal arts school. We're a very, very good school. You know, we're located in central Pennsylvania, Huntington, PA. So, I mean, it's kind of a place where we get guys that I think are serious about what they're doing, but they don't take themselves too serious. I mean, I think there's just the humility of going there. So I think part of it is, you know, finding guys with that and being very open and honest with them about the experience they're going to get when they get here. You know, we tell the guys it takes three things to play here. One, you got to really love what you're doing. You got to love the game. And it's not just like everybody likes to shoot around, but we're kind of the game and the competitiveness meet, you know, and kind of that grind and that kind of everyday grit. Like you got to love that or you're not going to be happy. I think you got to love being a part of a team and you got to be a team guy. Non-team guys are guys that are stat sheets, you know, sheet checkers. And I know we all do it a little bit, but guys that are really into that just don't work with me. It just doesn't work. I don't see the game that way. I don't see it through those eyes. It never changes. So it's not going to work. And then, you know, the last one is you got to be tough to play here. I say now I own it. I've been coaching 23 years. I'm probably old school. You know, I'm still going to challenge you. I'm still going to make you be better. We have to be tough here because we're not a blue blood. We're not one of the top schools. That's part of being kind of in the middle. So I think just being direct and honest with guys about what your expectations are, what you expect. I think being someplace for a long time, I think helps guys make good decisions about you. I think that may be more what it is. I think we get guys that make better decisions to come to us because there's more information on us there, and what you see is what you're going to get. So I think that helps guys soon, you know, cut bait sooner. No way am I going there. I don't want to be there. There's a better option for me. And I think there's also that comfort. Like we tell guys, I think there's a place for everybody. I really do. I think everybody can be successful. And I don't think that takes away from us having a great product either if they go somewhere else. I think the big thing is get a group of guys that want to be in the gym together and at least have that starting point and then realize that the roller coaster makes the ride. You know, the ups and downs, the twists and turns, the days you don't want to do this anymore, the days you want to give it up. But then the days you never want it to end. You know, that's the whole idea. That's what the experience is supposed to be. And trying to get guys to understand that this isn't going to be, you know, rainbows and lollipops every day, and nor should it be if we're doing things the right way.
You think about the environments that you recruit in. Do you think about high school environments versus AAU environments any differently in terms of how you evaluate kids? Do you have a preference of one over the other when you're trying to take a look at a kid and see whether they're going to be a good fit? Are you looking for different things in a kid's high school with their high school team versus their AAU team? Just how do you think about those two arenas?
Yeah, I mean, I think a little bit for us is it's probably the level of the high school. So one of the things about it around us is we have a lot of small high schools. So like single A, double A in Pennsylvania is the lowest level, or smallest level, squat size. What we found is, and we can get in early, particularly we access a lot of those guys, what you find with those guys, the really most talented guys, they're just better. And they might be the best kid in their town since they're in eighth grade, you know? And so I think sometimes they have kind of holes in their game that you don't even see till you get them because they just haven't been challenged in the same way. So I think we've got to be really intentional about that. So we want to see probably those guys in different AAU situations with some of the better AAU teams if they have access to that, to see them against better, more complete players. Whereas like if we're going with our other guys that are at big high schools, 6A high schools around here, those things, I just think those guys, there's more competition. Their game's more complete and it translates more directly when they come as freshmen. And so I think it's a little bit of a blend. So if we see those kids, we feel better about what we're seeing. The other guys, we want them because that's been an edge for us. What those guys often bring is a confidence. They've been the man. They know how to be the man. They know how to win games. And sometimes you get a kid from a 6A high school that was their sixth guy, you know, or fifth guy. who doesn't know what it means to actually carry the load and have to be on every day. And that's a different transition. So I think trying to see him in different environments as much as possible, trying to understand and, you know, meet them where they are, like what's their background and where it is. And I think that's the other thing, experience. We have experience to play on here with just kind of, you know, knowing a feel like, hey, this academic profile, what they're interested in studying, meeting the family, this is going to be a really good fit. Like I said, if guys come at it a different way, we're going to play defense here. the only score we care about is the final one. And that's a certain kid, and you can get a feel. You get a feel for like who's going to be a better fit than others. But, you know, also being open that, you know, the one great thing about no scholarships at Division III is you can take a couple more guys. Right? We don't actually have to say no. We don't have to weed guys out. We just have to know coming in, right? And so not being afraid to take some risks on some of those guys. And, hey, some of the guys we weren't ever sure have turned out to be the best. Some of the guys we thought were surefire kids didn't really work out. But I think that's where at our level we got to build in a margin so you might be right or wrong and always keep going. You always have to get the next class. It never ends. And that's probably the biggest thing you have to keep in mind. You got to always get the next class no matter what.
When you look back retrospectively, obviously it's hard in the moment to identify in a kid, as you said, there's some hits, there's some misses, and you can think a kid's going to be great and ends up not being so. And you can think a kid's going to be, maybe. And then that kid ends up being one of your better players. But when you look back at the guys who have had the most success in your program, what are the characteristics of those guys that have been the most successful players that have come through your program?
I think it's their everyday approach. They're always the most low maintenance guys. They're just the guys that come in, go to work, get it, take coach and listen, and it never feels hard, right? It's like any relationship. It's like, putting on a glove. It fits like a glove. It just works from day one. I think we all wish we could just identify exactly what that is in every situation. But you can't. But man, when you get those kids, there's nothing like it. Like, it's just, you're on the same page all the time. And I think those are the ones that turn into those great relationships that we all appreciate as coaches that last a long time. I mean, it's just really hard. If a kid doesn't get everything they ever wanted, if they don't get more than they thought they could get, it's really hard to always have a great relationship with that kid. You can have a good one, but not have the one of depth where maybe you provide something for that kid that the parents and the kid didn't see coming. They never thought they'd get to that level. And you get it as a parent, like I get it. I think it's, they just from day one. But if I had to say anything, it's probably their ability to listen and apply concepts and be coached and avoid kind of the pitfalls of either immaturity or lack of confidence. So they're confident kids that are comfortable in their own skin that can fail and learn and get better and grow and listen. And I think sometimes you get guys that maybe listen, but aren't as confident with failure in those kind of situations. And so then they're always looking for a reason why. And then I just think those guys that come in and from day one, now they have to have the prerequisites with the skill and size and athleticism.
Right. Absolutely. But
even some of those guys that don't quite have that, have a little less, but just have that sense of self, like confidence that's they're okay. They know there's better players out there, but they don't care. They can be a good one. Those guys are, those are your leaders. Those are your guys that make an impact on the overall success of the team. I think otherwise the pieces don't change a whole lot, right? It's those guys that, and if you get a collection of those guys, that's when you really have good, it's great. And trying to identify as many of those guys as you can get.
What have you guys done with your 8 days?
Well, because we went to Canada this year, we got 10 extra practices too. But
nice.
So we got to be careful about making the season too long. So that's the other thing now, but the 8 practices, we've really tried to do more kind of concept stuff. We've not done as much of the skill stuff. We've asked guys to do that on their own, but we've tried to do more defensive and offensive concept to try to get big picture in, so that they have context for the small stuff that we do when we get into it. So when we can go more live. Now, we haven't done any – in those 8 practices, we didn't do any live stuff at all. But we, you know, we might take closeouts all the way up to one or two dribbles, but not play it through, or we might do kind of shell all the way up to where it could go live. So I don't think it's any less taxing, but we wanted to make sure we were in condition and shape. We wanted to use it that way. So we wanted to make sure we're in a stance and moving laterally to really hit the ground running. But we wanted them to get a big picture view of all the things we're trying to do, and some of the base fundamentals and concepts, so that when once we started practice, kind of that whole part, now we get back to the part stuff, and now we kind of fill in the really competing, going one-on-one, doing those kind of things, but they know where it's going to go. But we'll see where it goes. We talk about that every day. Like, as much of this year is trying to evaluate how to use those days, right? And it's kind of cool. It's fun to have that change now after this long. You get so used to how you're going to do it, pull the practice, you know, like in different teams, younger teams, we do it a little different, but I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed kind of the idea. It's been amazing. Even though we didn't go live in those situations, we didn't even play. The same kind of dynamic after eight practices, and they were two times a week for 4 weeks, is the same dynamic we had after eight full practices where we were going live, in terms of like the development of a team, stages where guys were. It was kind of, it was really interesting. It's been cool. I just hope we manage it right. But part of that is we have a veteran group, and we knew we were going to lengthen the season, so we didn't want to bang them up. We didn't want to put them in those situations. We didn't want to expand it too much. So I don't know if we'll change in the future or not.
Yeah, you kind of be a good case study over the next couple of years, right, as you try different things and look at what works and what doesn't work. And just, again, that self-reflection that we talked about earlier.
Yep.
How do you put together a trip to Canada? What's it like when you do that? How does that process work?
Well, I mean, for us, we just kind of email some places. You want to play?
Done.
And the reason we do it is because we're able to just pay for it. We don't have to ask the guys. I mean, I think at our level, hey, we're going over to wherever. Kids are fundraising for 3 years and parents are writing checks. And I've been a part of that. And not everybody can always go over the summer because of summer, you know, jobs and stuff. And then I always felt like this kid's paying this much money and you're not going to play him. So like, we want to use everything we do in our program. We want to use to help us be better and win games. So we try to match it with that. And so we're able to pay for it. It's only about 8 hours for us to get six, even if when we've gone to Toronto area in the past. So it's not really much more than an extended road trip. We just find teams that want to play. And then, like everything else, you know, do the Division III way. You know, we're the ones that are our own travel agent, and we're the ones putting it together and doing the fundraising. But, you know, Ottawa's an awesome city. It's the capital city here. So it's a great place. You can park the bus. They can go everywhere, walking everywhere. So, and our goal to get out of it is just to really become closer as a team, get to know each other, have that experience. Find out about ourselves, and then be able to hit the ground running when regular practice starts.
Talk about putting together a practice. What's your philosophy on how you design it, balance between offense and defense? Do you keep the same structure every day? What does your practice plan look like?
Ours is pretty much, I mean, our guys wouldn't know that. I mean, I think because I'm always emphasizing defense, whether we're playing live or not, you know, so they feel it, probably feel it tilts, but actually like time allotment, we're about 50-50. You know, so we're going to, you know, we're always going to start early, probably, depending on the time of year. We might do a pre-practice where we're doing some kind of skill concept thing for maybe 8 to 10 minutes, but not a lot. We try to keep our skills separate of practice. You know, we don't shoot a lot. We don't do a lot of skill in practice. It's really team stuff, team concept stuff. A lot of that, I think, is we're a defensive type team. I think that's harder to do if you're a defensive team. You know, the defensive fundamentals are just as important, I think, sometimes neglected. I don't agree that defense is just playing hard. That is absolutely not the truth. There's as much skill and technique to defense, I think, as there is offense. I think that's sometimes just an easy out if you're an offensive-minded coach. But we're 50-50. We'll start, though. Our first portion of practice will be defense, and then our second portion will be offense. And then we'll finish with, like, our play 5-on-5 stuff. For the last portion. And so when we're 50-50, that's our breakdown kind of periods. And then it's probably our last half hour, 45 minutes is all 5-on-5, you know, working on both.
You guys are going 5-on-5. How do you keep the flow going and still make the coaching points that you want to make? Are you guys focusing in on, okay, today we're working on one or two things. What do you try to get your guys to focus on in the 5-on-5 setting?
Yeah, no, I've never been great on the let's focus on one or two things. I mean, it's always been hard for me.
Coach what you see, right?
Exactly right. I mean, whatever the drill's aligned to, like, let's always be getting better at whatever we're getting better at, which is the game, you know, whatever we're doing. So, I'm probably not great at the flow stuff either. I think I've gotten better. I would say that would be one of the things when I was younger, guys said it's tough to get a rhythm, tough to get a rhythm in practice because I am still fairly breakdown heavy. In the play stuff, I will interrupt. That's where I've gotten better. I've gotten more patient, let guys go, understand, and know when to stop a little bit better. I think it's more an art. I mean, we do a lot of like half court games, like 5-on-5-on-5. We like to carry guys, more guys, so we can play a lot 4-on-4-on-4. So even though I call those breakdowns or 3-on-3-on-3 and just keep rotating teams in, we want kind of chaos up tempo in terms of like transitions. Maybe not up and down the floor, but in terms of transitions and different scenarios. And we want it to be a bit chaotic in there because I think that's the game. I think learning to think that quickly and that fast. And we want to put pressure on guys to do that. We don't do all our stuff is pretty much controlled scrimmage stuff. Like, you know, it might be play at one end and go to the other, or ODO where we would play at one end, go down and come back. We're not doing a lot of like 5-minute scrimmages or put 10 minutes up. We got rid of like inter-squad scrimmages a number of years ago. Those, you know, after 15 minutes, everybody's tired and now you got two teams playing terrible, and not getting a lot out of it. I think we play enough games to get good at games. So that's where we've gone. And I'm telling you, I don't know if that's right. I listen to all these podcasts and I don't know if I know anything, you know, I think that's okay. It's what works for us and what I know I can stand for. I can't stand for that right now. So that's it. We're not doing it. And that's kind of where I am.
Do you look at this particular season and you think about the team that you have? What do you think are the keys to this team's success heading into this year?
I think consistency. I think we've talked about that. I mean, we really return probably 6 of our top 8 guys. Now we've got some key losses, and it's that kind of uncertainty. Did we replace those guys with developing others? Do we need to, you know, sometimes, you know, going to this, you know, 6 playing more and being in those spots helps you there. Sometimes it doesn't if you don't have quite enough size or whatever you need there. So, but for us, it's really been about being consistent and efficient. I don't mean just in games. I just mean, I think a lot of times teams get themselves in trouble by wasting effort and energy early in a season because they're not focused and not working through things as quickly or as efficiently as they should be. And I think there's just only so much in an emotional chest for an entire season. There's only so much in an energy bank, and you need it in those biggest moments. Like when it really gets rolling, you got to have that reserve to get up and get going. And if you've wasted it through early, even early in the season, if you got to really fight them to do things the way they need to, or be locked in the way they are, or make the progress the way they need, you're going to be in trouble. So I think that's the same thing for us. How consistently can we do everything? And how efficiently can we do it? You know, are we consistently rebounding? Are we consistently taking care of the ball? And more of it for us, we've talked, we think 3 things win here, and, you know, team toughness and execution. And I think we've studied every conference championship team. They're always usually the best in those 3 areas. Whatever they're doing, it doesn't even matter style of play, just those elements. And so we're really focused on that. And the big thing for us, I think, that we weren't as consistent on last year was our execution. It was up and down. You know, even in our playoffs, you know, we win our semifinal game. I thought we were as consistent as we were. We turned around that Saturday and just, you know, Scranton just handed it to us. And that was a lot them, but we weren't as consistent as we needed to be and what we needed to do. And so we've got to take a step with that, which you hope veteran guys can do.
Well, I'm sure that getting your guys together to do this preseason trip, I'm sure is going to be tremendously valuable just in terms of, again, that extra practice time that you guys were able to get. And then getting on the road, I know that whether you're a player or as a coach, I think that going on the road always tends to bring teams together.
Yeah, no, I think anytime you just get in a bus and getting off rest stops or going here and just downtime, to see each other in a different light. It's just really hard, you know, when you really get rolling into games. I think that's been the blessing now, these eight practices too. There's just a different sense of pressure than when you're going live from the 15th and you got to get it going and you got to make lineup decisions. And, you know, I think just being in those situations, but it's like everything, we got to use it the right way. If we miss that opportunity right now, then it's going to cost us. And so trying to get guys really focused on that, you got to take advantage of every opportunity. And, you know, young guys, they don't see a practice on April, whatever, or October, I'm sorry, October, whatever, as an opportunity, but man, it is, it is. And the longer you do it, you know, that's probably more valuable sometimes than some other things. And, really getting guys locked in on that stuff. And I got a really good group of guys. And more of it is not for me, it's for them. You know, we got eight seniors, you know, really four of them are in the rotation, but they've got one chance, you know, and they've got to play their best, and whatever happens, we can live with, but are we going to walk away feeling like we played our best and maxed out our team?
All right. I want to ask you one final two-part question. Part one, when you look ahead in your program over the next year or two, what do you see as being the biggest challenge? And then part two, when you think about what you get to do every single day, what brings you the most joy? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
Well, I think our challenge is we just added two new teams to the league. So now we're at 10. They're like Homing and Wilkes, both very good programs with very, very good coaches. I think the depth in our league is real. I think actually eight teams could probably win our league this year. So our biggest challenge is just staying in the mix, keeping right there. When we got to be a playoff team every year, we got to be there, and it never ends. And so it's our challenge. My 23 years has never changed at all. It's the same thing all the time. Like I say, we're as close to the bottom as the top. You know, we got to be fighting up out of our weight class all the time. We got to be in that kind of mode. So really, it's a huge recruiting class for us. We lose a lot of guys. But also, I think we've got younger guys here that are good. But we've got to, you know, you got to string classes together. You miss a recruiting class and you're trouble. I don't care what program you are or where you are. And you just got to keep going. And you can never kind of get complacent with that. We got to make sure we don't. And, you know, we just got to make sure we keep working that way.
Biggest joy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's cool for me now. Like, you know, our kids are 6 and 9, a little later to life to have kids, but having them around the gym and being around the team, you know, the first Tuesday we did a skill workout, I had to get them out of school because we didn't have a choice. They're in there rebounding for our guys. And, you know, that kind of connection and kind of the full circle nature of this is really cool. About, you know, my 6-year-old loves hoops. My 9-year-old daughter loves hoops. And seeing what they're in love with about the game that I still love, that it's still the same thing. Seeing a freshman come in and kind of have the same sense of joy about playing. And, you know, it's the greatest thing about being on a college campus, right? You know, they never get any older. And they still look at life the same way. They still do the same dumb stuff. But they do it, you know, with a joy and kind of an innocence that, man, if you can't get excited by that stuff or your first game or your first competition or seeing them play for the first time tomorrow night, I mean, I just still love the whole thing. That being said, man, I still like winning the best of all. So, you know, like going in, putting all the work in and walking out of there feeling like you put it together. Unless you really do it, man, you don't have any idea. So it, you know, hopefully we get enough of those this year. You never know. That's why we got to keep working and give ourselves the best shot.
Absolutely. Well said. Before we get out, Greg, I want to give you a chance to share how people can connect with you, connect with your program, whether you want to share a website, social media, email, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I will jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah, I mean, obviously our website, www.junianasports.net or www.juniana.edu. My email, curlygcurlyg@juniana.edu. I'm also on Instagram, Twitter. Those are two easy ways to get a hold of us. You can also just give me a phone call. So,
Greg, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule. A lot of fun, man. A lot of fun on this episode. To everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.